you've made it the right spot. If you're looking for tonight's Citizens Climate University, it's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's specific topic is handling difficult lobby scenarios. Lobbying 301 is part of CCL's Working with Congress training series in advance of our online June conference and lobby days. So in tonight's webinar, we'll demonstrate how to navigate some particularly difficult or tricky situations that you may or may not find yourself in. And to get us through our training tonight, we have two expert speakers. We have the wonderful Iona Ludi. Iona is CCL's Northeast Regional Coordinator, and Iona is dedicating her life right now to stopping climate change, like many of us on the line. As Regional Coordinator for CCL's Northeast Region, Iona delights in supporting the incredible work being done by her state coordinators, group leaders, congressional liaisons, and all the precious volunteers in her region, and loves hearing about their victories and challenges. She started in CCL with involvement in 2013 and has served as group leader, congressional liaison, and state coordinator. And also serving all of those roles with us tonight is our regional coordinator from the other coast, as well as CCL's education and engagement assistant, Tamara Staten. Co-founded her local CCL chapter in Portland back in 2012 and continues as lead facilitator of the chapter today. She has been serving as the regional coordinator for Greater Pacific Northwest since 2014 and supports leaders in expansion efforts throughout Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Alaska, Hawaii, and our three Pacific Island territories. So with us tonight, we have not only a chance to review this wonderful information with our two speakers, but we did also want to just quickly highlight our roadmap for all of the other lobby trainings. So if you are curious where this might fit in, there is a wonderful one-stop link that you can put in your chat or save for later. It's just called cclusa.org/preparing-for-lobby-day. And you can see that we have two upcoming trainings that we are encouraging anyone that's going to be participating in an actual lobby meeting online to jump into. Both of those are going to be hosted by Dr. Richter, our Vice President of Government Affairs. He's going to give us a review of primary and supporting asks, and that's going to be next Thursday, the same time, the same Zoom line. And then 2 weeks after that, right before our lobby meetings, he's going to review an up-to-date moment-to-moment insight on the dynamics in Congress and how we can most effectively use our time in our meetings to support our agenda. We've also got an upcoming Q&A and additional trainings that you might be curious about on that page. So we wanted to highlight that all of those are available, and we'd love to speak to any questions you might have outside of the scope of tonight's training if we have time at the end. But on tonight, we're going to focus on the following areas. We're going to highlight how to respond with engagement to hard conversations you might have in your meetings. Iona and Tamara are going to demonstrate what we like to call bad, better, and best responses for each of these initial scenes to help give a window in and really keep in mind that there isn't just one best response. All of you on the line, I'm sure, have many other recommendations, and I encourage any of these scenarios that you have a response that you'd like to share, please put that in the chat so that we can learn from each other. Because by no means is there only one way to respond or really handle being an effective communicator with a lot of the topics we're going to cover. We also are going to cover some common temptations that we all fall into or pitfalls that might be tempting to employ with our meetings and how to really think differently about reacting in those situations. We'll talk about some hot button topics and also how to handle pushback that we might get from like-minded members of Congress or other fellow climate advocates. So with that review, though, thank you all so much for taking the time to join us tonight. It really warms my heart to see 40 people on the line. And let's get started with Iona and Tamara demonstrating how to respond to common objections that you might encounter.
Okay, so Tamara and I are going to go through some examples of some of the more common concerns that you'll get while lobbying. Some of them are, what about China? Problems with the word tax? And belief that the Energy Innovation Act's carbon price doesn't rise quickly enough to be effective. That's just one of many, but we're using these as examples. Each of these topics has the potential to derail your meeting. Some of these are more likely to come from conservative or liberal offices, and some might be heard in both. Hopefully, after Tamara and I demonstrate a bad, better, and best response to each of these common problems, you'll have an idea of what you might say and do when you run into these situations or similar ones. But always remember this: stay focused and respond to what they say, not what you think they should hear. That should be your golden rule. For this section, Tamara and I will take turns being a member of Congress and a CCL volunteer. Then Brett will debrief each section. So first, Tamara's a staffer who raises a concern regarding China and India in a conservative office. We'll start with a bad response.
Iona, it doesn't really matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
Well, a lot of Republicans fail to acknowledge that China is doing what China is doing to address climate change. So obviously, that's a bad response. Here's a good response.
Iona, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
China and India are important. But the good thing about the Energy Innovation Act is that no matter what they do or don't do, we have more jobs, increase our competitiveness, and the air and water in our district will be cleaner. So that's a good response, right? But it sounds like I've internalized a laser talk. So here's the best response.
It doesn't really matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
Well, that's a valid concern, Tamara. Would you tell me more about why that matters to you?
Yeah, we see it this way. So if the U.S. is the only country eliminating coal and coal as a source of energy, then China and India are free riding at our expense. And we can't stop global warming by ourselves.
Ah, so what I'm hearing you say is that if there was a way to bring China and India along, then it would be much easier for this office to support climate action. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, but I mean, there are a lot of other issues we would have to overcome as well.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, Tamara. But getting back to the China and India concern, I had the same concern. And then I heard about how Reagan used a border adjustment to bring other countries along when combating the hole in the ozone layer. Would you like to hear more about what Reagan did to eliminate free riders?
So notice that Iona's best response started with acknowledgement and was followed by a question. Iona said, "That's a valid concern, Tamara. Would you tell me more about why that matters to you?" If in doubt on any issue, Iona's great phrase, "tell me more," can be relied on to continue to find that underlying issue or value. And this led to Iona discovering my underlying issue or value that China and India will just free ride. So use asking questions and listening for values so that we can find common ground. That's when we discovered the staffer's real issue is free riding. Even with the bad and even with the good response, we told them what we wanted to hear. And it's only after we asked clarifying questions and listened, were we able to find the underlying concern. So our next topic is the taboo surrounding the word tax. In this example, Iona is going to play the member of Congress and I will be the CCL volunteer. Action.
What you're talking about, Tamara, is really just a tax.
It's a fee, not a tax, if all the money goes back to household, dang it. Okay, so obviously not so good. Here's a better one.
What you're talking about, Tamara, is really just a tax.
And we feel good about thinking of this as a fee, based on the feedback from former Secretary of State Schultz. He says that if the net proceeds are returned to households, then it's a fee. So that's a better response, but here's what we think about a best response.
So what you're talking about, Tamara, is really just a tax.
Yeah, I've had that same concern, Congresswoman. I'm fiscally conservative myself. It sounds to me like reducing the burden on the government and our economy is an important priority for you. Is that true?
Absolutely. The last thing we need is another social spending program, especially now.
Yeah. Well, know that we share the same concern for minimizing government costs. And on this issue, I've turned to other conservatives like President Reagan's former Secretary of State, George Shultz, who's also on our advisory board, I might mention. So would you be up for having me tell you what I learned from listening to him?
Sure.
So Secretary Hipsholtz tells us that if we offset the fee revenue minus any administration costs with corresponding rebates to households, then we're not raising revenue to fund government programs. What's your take on that?
Well, it sounds like semantics to me, but there's a lot of semantics in governing.
That is true. You know, there are many other economists, in fact, 3,500 of them across the country, including the former chairs of the Federal Reserve, who also believe that we need to put the cost of reducing emissions onto the balance sheets of the producers. So they say that if all the net money collected goes back to households, it doesn't grow governments. And when people spend their dividend, it will be good for the economy. That's what the Energy Innovation Act is designed to do. What are your thoughts about the economist's statement?
Okay, so to summarize, notice that Tamara's best response started with an acknowledgement of the Congresswoman's concern. Tamara then asked permission to proceed, saying, "I've had the same concern, Congresswoman. I'm fiscally conservative myself. Would you like me to tell you what I've learned?" So in this example, Tamara found a way to agree on shared values, which led her to discovering my underlying issue or values. So our responses to my comment, what you're talking about, Tamara, is really just a tax, have gone from first, it's a fee, not a tax, all the money goes back to households. What I've done here is really started a battle over semantics. So then we go to, well, this is what Secretary of State George Shultz says. And again, both of those are really, they're both those responses are us telling, not really listening. So the last response involves us connecting on her values and asking for permission to give her our take. So we should recognize and appreciate that revenue coming from the government is a tricky issue, so especially for Republicans. So when we're ready, when they're ready to hear what we have to say, it would be really good to cite from trusted messengers that we feel valid would be validating, with voices like Secretary Shultz, George Mankiw, and others from their camp. So what you've done is move the conversation from something that scares them, the word tax, to a positive message, something that resonates with them. Our next topic is Tamara will play the member of Congress and I will be the CCL volunteer.
We won't vote for this because the policy's price doesn't rise quickly enough for it to be an effective solution.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that you, the very people we voted into office for responding to the climate crisis, aren't willing to consider policies unless they pass a 100% litmus test? That's obviously a bad response. So here's a better response. We won't vote for this because
vote for this because that the policy's price doesn't rise quickly enough for it to be an effective solution.
But I like that the bill sets a target of 90% greenhouse gas emission reductions by 2050 with a set of targets that mandate 40% reductions in 12 years. And if the emissions cuts don't keep up, the annual increase of the carbon fee will be strengthened from $10 to $15 per metric ton. So, okay, that's a better response, but there wasn't a lot of listening or dialogue. So here's an even better one.
Yeah, we won't vote for this because the policy's price doesn't rise quickly enough for it to be an effective solution.
Yeah, we hear this concern from some offices. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, if I'm going to support a climate policy, I want to make sure that it follows the Paris Agreement's goal of limiting global temperatures rising past 1.5 degrees Celsius.
So it sounds like ambition is important to you. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely fair. Absolutely. We need to respond to this crisis today, not some distant future.
Well, that's a big concern for us as well. There are some examples of how this policy can adjust if the strong targets in line with the Paris Agreements are still not being met. For example, the bill then would require the EPA to find other methods to reduce emissions to meet the targets. Would you like to hear more about that?
Great. So in summary, notice that Iona's better response started with acknowledgement and it was followed by a question, which definitely put me at ease. Iona said, "Yeah, we hear this concern from some offices. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?" And this led to her discovering my underlying issue or value, which is ambition. So our responses to our member of Congress's comment we won't vote for this because the policy's price doesn't rise quickly enough for it to be revenue neutral, have gone from, okay, so what you're telling me is that we only have room for one single climate policy, which is relatively off-putting, to asking questions and listening for value so that we can find common ground, which is creates connection. That's when we discovered her real concern was ambition.
So yeah, let's do a quick little debrief and then pause for some reflections on those listening in to share anything that stood out to them or examples that they'd like to highlight about how they may have responded. But at least for me, kind of listening in on these three different scenarios, a couple of the key takeaways in moving past misconceptions that we might encounter is just really not only about the content that we've shared. Clearly, these are three specific scenarios, but that process that Tamara and Iona modeled back and forth. So if you're like me, when you're faced with an objection or somebody, you know, voicing a strong concern, my natural inclination is actually to come back with a fact, right? And to immediately spout back kind of a dialogue that really just highlights one thing that's a talking point. However, one thing that Dr. Hayhoe and many others continue to remind us is that you have to connect on shared values to really help move people forward, especially if they're not really in a place where they're ready to accept what you might have to say. So in order to determine what those underlying values might be, both Iona and Tamara in these scenarios ask questions to draw out more information. So we establish that common ground, we clarify and make sure that we're assessing things correctly by asking them, and then we can move on by connecting on that value and framing our response as if we're looking out on this challenge from the same perspective. With that though, I'd also like to highlight one other resource that you may not be aware of that we have, and I'll put a link to it in the chat. It is a wonderful new topic that you can see in our resources on community called Handling Challenging Questions. And the wonderful thing is that it's organized by 9 different themes. So if you've got things that you are concerned about with your member that they might have disagreements on over the policy details or about market-based mechanisms overall or about environmental justice priorities or around conservative values, you name it, a lot of these topics are explored by really identifying underlying factors that might be driving their concern, some helpful background information, along with actual links to articles or research to back up the information, and then some suggested shorter responses that you can have as a dialogue. So some of what we've highlighted tonight is built off of that, and there's many other topics that are available here on that chat link as well. But I did want to highlight that that's a wonderful opportunity that you can find out about and really explore on your own in your preparations for your lobby meetings.
Okie dokie. Awesome. So as tempting as it might be to have our ice cream and eat it too, especially now, here are some common temptations you should avoid. Promising what you can't deliver. So an example of this is that CCL will change its position on a key concern for the member. Another temptation to avoid is overstating our case. An example of this is promising with 100% certainty that all constituents will come out ahead with the dividend. Asking for less than you want is also something we want to avoid. We've discussed in other trainings that you want your primary ask to be that the member co-sponsor the Bipartisan Energy Innovation Act, and in the Senate to make climate a bridge, not a wedge issue. So only go on your supporting ask when you know clearly that the office's reaction to your primary ask has been rejected or they're not quite ready to do that yet. We also want to avoid showing up to argue the science. So keep the focus of the conversation on the relationship, like Iona reminded us, learning about their priorities and values and grounding elements of the Energy Innovation Act with those concerns. So if you're in a meeting where you are not a constituent, defer to the constituent's plan and approach to their member of Congress. It can be really tempting to want to share your own well-informed ideas, but remember, we are there first and foremost to feature the support of the member of Congress's district. So if needed, make sure to coach and support especially first-time attendees to be ready to share some of the main points of your meeting goals. So there have been meetings where a CCL volunteer has gotten a little heated. So, for example, an angry CCL volunteer might say, it's you guys in Texas with your oil companies who are stalling and making this worse. So your team leader might handle this by saying, Iona, well, let's just say it was Iona who is a volunteer who's upset. I appreciate your concern and the point you're wanting to make here, but let's turn it back to what Bob the staffer was just saying.
Okay, so let's move on to our next focus. So there's a huge misperception among some people, including our own volunteers, that we face climate denial in congressional offices all the time. You all know that that's happening less and less, but you know it could still happen. So, and a lot of people are nervous about encountering it. So here are some thoughts. Here would be a bad way of handling this would be getting angry or defensive, of course. You probably all know that. But so just to remind everybody that no matter how ridiculous a statement could be to sound to us, we should acknowledge their concern, repeat back to them what they're saying so they know they're being heard. And you know, use the active listening skills, let them know that we're not there to put them in a no-win situation, and highlight that our goal is focusing on understanding their thoughts and preferences for the best way to lower emissions and make it easier for them to support the Energy Innovation Act. So let's look at how to manage the situation. So I'll be the member of Congress and Tamara will be the volunteer. You know, Tamara, the satellite data shows the planet hasn't warmed in 15 years. So why should we do anything about this?
Yeah, I get that. I definitely understand that there's a place for uncertainty in the scientific process. I mean, we've got satellite measurements, surface measurements, ocean measurements, and sometimes they might provide varying information. If your office would find it useful, we'd love to set up a separate time to discuss the science of climate change and help get a trusted climate scientist from our local university to come. Is that something your office would be interested in the future?
Well, you know, I am a state grad, so I'd be interested in hearing if you have connections with any of the scientists there.
Great, I'll do that. So today, though, we're here to discuss a policy that's good for people and the economy, a policy that will create jobs and save lives and help us manage our emissions. And that is something that I care deeply about. So even if we might not be on the same page with the science right now, I think that the policy's other virtues, like job creation and saving lives, warrant your consideration. I think that might be something that you might be interested in too. So what are some of your thoughts about the policy?
Okay, so we'll debrief that. There are two key things to remember with that. Tamara was not confrontational. She acknowledged that the science can be confusing without telling me I was wrong. She extended a hand by offering to bring in an expert from their home state. And this is much more comfortable and less combative. It leaves the door wider for breakthroughs rather than just saying, no, you're wrong. And this could be true for any disagreement that you have with a member of Congress. It's better to help them find a way forward on their own terms, not forcing our terms on them. If they ended up supporting our policy based solely on economic benefits, why would we care? CCL's fundamental mission is to create a livable world. So ultimately our goal is to pass legislation that achieves this. So it doesn't really matter why a representative or senator may choose to vote to do this as long as they do it. We have a time monitor in our meetings. And so one additional role that the time monitor takes on in the last few years is keeping an eye out for how much time CCL members are spending talking relative to how much the office is talking. It's going to be key for your group to remind each other ahead of time that one of the goals of the meeting is to get the staff or member talking at least half of the meeting time. So it's going to be trickier on if we're going to be on Zoom, but and we've all come across great talkers in our lives. But if this happens in your meeting, here are a few ways to consider dealing with it. First of all, review with your team ahead of time how you're going to communicate with each other during the meeting. Lots of groups are setting up a system with a group text or a separate online chat just for your team, so you can text each other during the meeting. Then that would be a kind of a, you could give each other reminders to get back on track, or maybe pause for checking in with each other. So that would be one idea. You know, get yourself communicating with each other privately. In the meeting, if you don't do that, you could, and you had somebody who's going off track, wait till there's a breaking point, acknowledge the speaker's position, and pivot back to the meeting plan. When's best to interrupt? Well, you know, you'll have to use your judgment, use your experience. You don't want to cut someone off in mid-sentence, but take your opportunities where you can and be friendly but firm in jumping to help redirect the conversation.
Yeah, those are great points, Iona. Thanks for bringing all that up.
Yeah.
So you also meet people who agree with you on climate and who understand that we need to act, but they may favor another policy or have reservations with the Energy Innovation Act. So you might encounter offices that feel really frustrated or focus on President Trump or the EPA's rollback of hard-fought environmental protections. So how should we deal with that situation? So first of all, we want to show appreciation for their important work on this issue and the worthiness of their plan or ideas. So again, validating. We want to acknowledge the passion that they have for people and for their chosen approach. As climate advocates, we all share a common goal of transitioning to a decarbonized economy. It's way, way too easy to get upset with people who are already concerned about climate change, who don't agree with our exact approach, and the slight differences should never let us forget that we're working towards the same goals. We want to refrain from negativity. We don't want to bash their plan or their idea, because they're proud of their ideas and they have a reason for coming up with the ideas that they do. We want to consider telling them what we appreciate about their idea and work to address this important and their work to address this important issue. So we appreciate not only their ideas, but their work behind them. We also want to acknowledge that to get done what we're trying to get done, CCLers need to keep all of our focus on our area of advocacy too. So you could frame it with the concept that our VP of Government Affairs, Danny Richter, likes to share about thinking of the environmental movement as a large ecosystem. In any ecosystem, the diversity of life forms its strength. So having more than one approach lends a diversity of solutions and is a way that gives us all strength. CCL is super happy to occupy our niche within the larger overall climate movement.
Yeah, I love that ecosystem analogy, and definitely want to emphasize there's a couple of takeaways here, and then let's get to some questions again in the chat. Have everyone participate with any observations that they have. So in talking about continuing to have kind of how to handle these difficult situations, the first moment for me is really just to be able to separate your passion for this topic and the urgency that we need to act on it from your immediate reaction if you do handle some hot button topic. Obviously if somebody's gonna say something out of left field that might raise your blood pressure, it's important to find a way for you to be able to keep your cool and have that remembrance that our pride and ego is not as important as the planet. One other phrase that we love in CCL is this: to assume positive intent. And what that means is just really thinking through that others' concerns are often genuine. And even if they're not, the importance of treating them as being genuine and taking the time to really practice acknowledging and identifying what their concerns are helps here. So if you can help eliminate that innate bias that we have to blame others for being wrong, then we can not only change the context of that relationship, but also create conditions that can develop a more productive relationship with our members and staff. So keep on falling back on that tell me more tool and make sure to let them finish their point or their thing that they're going to share before asking for permission to proceed.
So these issues can elicit strong responses from either side. So what we don't want you to do is to be inauthentic. Speaking of authenticity, you shouldn't say things that don't work for you. Okay, so the people you meet with will be able to tell if you're being inauthentic and it's not going to work nearly as well. So if the conversation gets off track, redirect it back to the reason for our visit. So let's start with the Green New Deal. So Iona, you care to begin with the Republican office perspective?
Yeah. I am not a supporter of the Green New Deal, and it's a big government proposals.
So a better response would be, I understand that. The Energy Innovation Act is a conservative approach to climate change because it simply corrects the market failure. This policy does not increase the size of government, is revenue neutral, and lets markets go to work, letting the best energy source win. So what are your thoughts about risk management policies with those priorities? In a Democrat's office, you might hear something a little bit different. I'm a big supporter of a Green New Deal. Is your policy part of the Green New Deal?
Thanks for asking. We are grateful to the Green New Deal supporters for raising the urgency of climate change in the media and within the halls of Congress. Citizens Climate Lobby and our supporters also understand the urgency of the climate crisis and agree that it requires big solutions. So we share their goal of transitioning away from fossil fuels while creating jobs and boosting the economy. In fact, many co-sponsors, over 30, I believe, of the Energy Innovation Act in the House also have signed on as co-sponsors of the Green New Deal as well.
Thanks, Iona. So some main takeaways from that is appreciate raising urgency on solving climate change with the media and Congress. There's also an agreement on the need for big solutions. The Energy Innovation Act will reduce emissions by 40% in 12 years and 90% by 2050, and that the Energy Innovation Act is built on broad bipartisan support. So things that we don't want to say, we don't want to put down or complain about the Green New Deal. At CCL, we stay positive with optimism as one of our core values. We don't equate the Energy Innovation Act and the Green New Deal or otherwise use their language or framing to promote the bill, because doing so will potentially alienate both Green New Deal supporters and those who are opposed. So Iona, take it away.
Well, next we're going to discuss the hot button topic dealing with nuclear energy. Sometimes Republican offices will bring up nuclear power. Again, we want to find that common ground. And in this case, our common ground is supporting non-carbon emitting sources of energy. The Department of Energy, under both Democrat and Republican administrations, has stated that nuclear is a safe form of electrical generation, and climate scientists and CCL Advisory Board member Dr. James Hansen also sees nuclear as part of our future energy mix. So in a Republican office, you might hear, nuclear has to be part of the conversation. It must be on the table. But a better response might be, well, thanks for sharing this important priority for your office. We hear you say that you want to include nuclear power as part of the solution, and the Energy Innovation Act model will do just that. Similar policies are supported by nuclear companies like Exelon. But unlike many other policies, placing a fee on carbon gives nuclear and renewables the same degree of support compared with fossil fuels. Thus, it lets nuclear compete with renewables and other means of emissions reduction on a fair level playing field. Would you like to hear more about that?
Thanks, Iona. So in a Democrat's office, you might hear something a little bit different. Your report shows that nuclear will increase under your plan. A better response might sound a little something like this. Yeah, thanks for sharing your concerns about nuclear. It sounds like fuel safety and environmental impacts and figuring out alternatives are important to your office. We recognize that there are important, passionate views on nuclear energy's role in the transition to 100% renewable energy. And CCL's focus is on accelerating the overall shifts to a worldwide clean energy economy in a time frame that matches the scale of the challenge we face. So how do you feel about the overall growth in renewables with the Energy Innovation Act?
Okay, next. In a Republican office, you might hear, I'm not interested in pursuing any type of action I don't hear my constituents supporting. So a bad response would be, hello, where are your polling experts? Any recent study shows this is a clear trend that you're not addressing. What a better response. Here's some three possible alternatives. We entirely understand your desire to focus on lawmaking that your district is asking for. May I ask what types of environmental concerns you mainly hear about in your district? Or, we entirely understand your desire to focus on lawmaking that your district is asking for. Out of curiosity, if constituent concerns were different on this issue, how would you feel? Have you seen an issue that personally matters to you where you or a colleague were able to get out in front of vocal constituents and frame it in a way where your interests and theirs were still met? That's pretty cool. Or, we entirely understand your desire to focus on lawmaking that your district is asking for. We have some interesting tools, both recent polls indicating 75% of conservatives under 40 support similar policies, and a mapping software that researchers at Yale have put together that shows Americans' climate change beliefs and policy support at the congressional district level. Is this type of information useful to your office?
Great. Thanks, Iona. Sure. So, for tonight's tricky scenarios, using open-ended questions from the practice of motivational interviewing is a really helpful way to be able to dive in deeper to the members' thoughts or the staffers. So while it may be tempting to think that the way to reach our elected officials is to find the perfect argument that will persuade them, nobody really likes to be persuaded or approached that way, even if it starts with a very nice appreciation. Thank you, but let me tell you what you should believe. So as a result, we've been working on applying the techniques of motivational interviewing to our meetings. And a key idea is to ask strategic, open questions that facilitate the member talking positively in their own words about the things that will move him or her to positive action. And then we can strategically reflect back the things that they have said to let them know that we heard them, and to highlight the things that will let him or her move forward. So let's demonstrate these on these last two hot button topics, one more likely to come from Democratic offices and one from Republican offices. One important concern that you might hear from Democratic offices regards the regulatory adjustment elements of the Energy Innovation Act. So in a Democrat's office, you may hear, I don't like that HR 763 limits regulations. We need every tool we have to solve climate change, and we can't wait 10 years to see if your bill is working. So if I were tired or frustrated after a long day, I might say, yeah, you're right. I totally wasted my money coming here. But if I had my head on straight and I had practiced a little bit, I might say this. Thanks for sharing these important concerns. It sounds like the urgency of acting on climate change and the rigor of any policy that does so are what matter to you most. Can you tell me more about what part of the regulatory pause feels like too much of a trade-off for you? Iona, you want to chime in and be that staffer?
Yes. Well, for one thing, I think 10 years is just too long, especially when we know that this next decade is pivotal to get things right on climate change.
Oh, I entirely agree. The next decade is critical. So could I share what helps me feel comfortable with the way it's designed? And then I'd love to hear your reflections.
Okay, sure.
So one reason that I support a strong price on carbon is that it can pass more quickly because it has bipartisan support and can be in place and reducing emissions within 9 months, which is much faster than regulations could be implemented. But if we aren't moving on those targets, I love that the regulatory authority is not just restored to the EPA after 10 years, but EPA authority would be strengthened to require the EPA to institute regulations to meet emission targets. This is stronger regulatory legislation than has ever existed in the US.
Okay. Well, I like requiring the EPA to act, and I like that there's room for other policies. But I'm not sure I'm willing to bet everything on the market and economic models. But I still don't get why we should diminish the Clean Air Act at all. For me, I just don't like that any policy might erode this fundamental bedrock of our environmental law.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I agree that the Clean Air Act is very important. And if you look at it, the bill text makes it really clear that the Clean Air Act will remain the law of the land. But unfortunately, the Clean Air Act has not been enough to really address climate change, So we need new legislation. This policy around the Clean Air Act, for example, the policy puts a strong price on carbon and after 10 years actually gives clear direction to the EPA from Congress that would prevent the type of court challenges that have hampered policies based on the current authority of the Clean Air Act. Thoughts?
That sounds good. But what about things like vehicle mileage and the Clean Power Plan? How does this bill affect them?
So, good questions. Energy Innovation Act would affect the Clean Power Plan, except that it never went into effect and has been replaced by the Affordable Clean Energy Rule by the Trump administration. And it also affects greenhouse gas permitting rules for industrial plants. But everything else remains intact and untouched. The policy provides for continued authority for the EPA to keep our air and water clean and healthy, and allows for the continuation of vehicle mileage, you know, like the CAFE standards, and also allows for renewable fuel standards and the ability to regulate methane leaks and even states' abilities to pass additional greenhouse gas regulations.
Well, that's actually quite a bit more limited than I was thinking. But aren't you concerned this might open up for bad actors in Congress to insert other language that limits the Clean Air Act?
Yeah, I mean, we have been really concerned about that. And what gives me relief is that if you think about it, every piece of legislation in Congress goes through this same markup and amendment process. The likelihood that the same Congress would pass H.R. 763 into law would approve of provisions that threaten the Clean Air Act seems incredibly unlikely. I know for a fact that CCL does not want this to happen and would do everything in the organization's power to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Okay, well, I'm going to make sure to do everything in my power to stop that from happening.
That's awesome. Thank you. I want you and all concerned Americans speaking up to make sure Congress does the right thing. For me, the regulatory limits feel like an acceptable trade-off because they're so minimal, and this policy will achieve much higher emission reductions than any regulations proposed to date. And I also feel really good knowing that Congress, as well as state and local governments, can also always enact further legislation addressing climate as it sees fit, or as we in the public demand. We'd really like to brainstorm with you. Would it be helpful for your office to get connected with other legal experts who have been pondering these same questions?
Well, let me think about that. Thank you for that offer. But thanks for letting me know more about all this. It's really helpful to have more context. You've been wonderful.
All right, so let's wrap it up there. And thank you to both of our character actors tonight for inhabiting their roles and trading out between that of a congressional staffer or a CCL supporter. In summary, for all of those on the line here, if you have to remember three steps, listen for shared values, acknowledge them, connect on a point about our policy that you think demonstrates that connection, and then ask for their question to draw out more input and a chance to deepen your understanding about how we can work together moving forward. The key thing is, as long as you lead with appreciation, respect, and lead with your opportunity to have that next meeting, consider it an ongoing victory to build relationships with all of our members and to build this political will we need in Congress. But if you have any questions, you know, feel free to contact any of us and post these in the forums. That's where we actually have the chance to be able to learn from each other best, is actually sharing your thoughts so that the wisdom of the crowds can take over. So with that, please don't be a stranger. If there's ways that we can support you outside of tonight, we're here for you. We know that this is a big lift that all of us are doing together, and it's going to be a big accomplishment. But to get there, if you have any other questions, we look forward to being in touch and being available to support you. And to close us tonight, I'll pass it to you, Iona, to share one of, I know, your and mine and many people's on this line's favorite civic engagement quotes.
Okay, well, we can't hear enough of this one from Margaret Mead. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. And that's you.
Here's to that. I'm going to unmute all lines so we can be here for each other.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.